We can't criminalize criminal activity because then criminals will be treated as if they've broken the law. Instead, we must
employ. I don't have
employ
the answers.
Seattle
We're
spirit.
Actually making this up as we go along.
If there were easy solutions, Seattle probably would not have elected a woman mayor.
It is an act of war to invest in white supremacy and terrorism with this bunker.
Am I the only one who can't find that finds that continually amusing? You could be honest with me. If you're tired of it, you don't want to play it anymore, hit me up on Twitter at Toddy Herman or text line 800-465-8770. I laugh because that's the mayor. That's the actual functional mayor. Because you know what the woman who gets paid to be mayor says?
This city is under a lot of duress right now. Seattle's a hard place to live.
If only you could do something, Jenny. That's going to amuse me until the day I stop breathing. Under duress, could someone should step in. Someone should step in. Yes, they should, Jenny. So in Green Lake, I told the story. The guy was walking around with his little girl. She's 2 years old. He has her in his arms, and he just noticed this guy was taking these pictures. Now, as Garrett made the point on the text line, he's right. It's not illegal to do that. But this is what happened. His name he talked with Dory Monson on Car Radio. His name is Bob Cameron. Or probably Brett Cameron. He is a firefighter.
But I told him that he shouldn't be taking pictures without people's permission, and that if he keeps doing it, I'm going to report him and his camera to the police. We had a verbal exchange there. He then started taking pictures of me and my daughter. I asked him to stop. He took another photo. I said, don't take any more photos or I'm taking your camera. He didn't have any permission. At that point, he had this thing around his wrist, and I didn't know what it was until he started spraying us, and he sprayed her right in the face and then continued to spray me.
So it's not the picture taking that got the guy in trouble. It's the spraying of pepper spray on he and a little kid. And, of course, this guy's a firefighter, so he has thoughts on the entire insanity in our city. You might say the city's under duress.
If something needs to happen, the city needs to protect my daughter.
Right. A 2-year-old kid gets pepper sprayed. This could be super serious. Okay, so the kid's terrified now to go out in public probably because if you've not been pepper sprayed, it hurts. And if you're a little kid, it hurts worse. They're more sensitive to this. This guy was in jail for about 24 hours on the charges of assaulting a child, of assaulting an individual. He's been given conditional release. Now, what are the chances you think he'll live up to the conditions of his release?
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
What do you think the chances are that he does what he's told during this release? What we're seeing here, and it is so fascinating because this is a great opportunity to put national shame back on Seattle because that stuff works. The national shame around the tax on jobs, that worked. That helped propel that thing back. Right? It really did. It's an opportunity for us to point to others and say, hey, we know how it works. That's why when I've been able to be on national radio for Rush, I've made a point of trying when they'll let me to talk about Seattle. They're very gracious people. When I say let me, it's a national show. We can't talk about Seattle all the time. So this Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez out of New York City, who pretended to be the Brooklyn girl, but she's actually from upstate New York, here's what she's saying about our cities.
I think that cities are a real opportunity for us to experiment with these policies and to also reject the argument that these things don't work, that housing as a right doesn't work.
See, this woman, this ignorant woman from Boston College, and thank you, by the way, someone pointed out the other day, I said Columbia. Us in a general, it's like saying Coca-Cola. It's an elite university to me. It's one or the other. It's the same thing. Yeah, I want a Coke. Pepsi be okay? Sure, Pepsi's fine. So she wants to treat our cities as experiments. It's being done. We have housing as a right here. You want to live in an RV and shoot up meth and cook it and process heroin? Great. Be our guest. You don't need to pay any property tax. But this is easily an absurd experiment. Recall this. DUIs in Washington State and DUI deaths in Washington State are at record high levels. And they continue to be at record high levels. And as the cops say, it's not an oops. right? That's what they say. Now, keep that in mind, because they got to tell you, a new store has opened.
Troopers say the driver of this white Subaru, a 20-year-old from Mercer Island, entered I-90 going the wrong way and slammed head-on into this tan Honda just after 3 a.m., killing the driver, who was a 25-year-old from Issaquah.
Last week alone, within this area, four people were killed by DUI collisions, and they were all victims in this case. And every time I see that, and every time we respond, and every time we go to that, the first thing that goes through my head is this was preventable.
Last year, 556 people died in DUI crashes on state roads.
So with Ocasio-Cortez saying our cities are great, great possibilities for having experiments. Okay, we're experimenting. We're experimenting with legal weed. We're experimenting with that. And, you know, the governor, he loves the legal weed, of course.
We got the best weed in the United States.
He loves it. We are seeing the results of this. So Ocasio-Cortez says, let's experiment. Okay, we've experimented. You know what we can tell you? The legal weed goes along with the DUIs, because I did a search. I went through and did a search about DUIs in our state, and I found a whole bunch of news coverage that points to the increase in not drunk driving, but drugged driving in the state of Washington. There's a whole bunch of Google results on this pointing out that now further and further, more often and than you'd think, it's now people being pulled over for drugged driving rather than drunk driving. But what are we doing here? If it's an experiment, shouldn't we be observing the data? But they're not observing the data. Far from it. They're running counter to the data. So what's opened now in our state? The first ever drive-through pot shop. Audria Jaggers is the general manager of the drive-through pot shop.
Some cannabis consumers don't share with everybody that they are, so this offers a whole other level of discretion. So they can literally make their order online, come to the drive-through and pick it up without anybody ever even knowing that they were on the premises. So the way that we exist is the tribe actually applied for this through a compact with the governor, and the drive-through window, all of the tenants of our business were approved within that compact.
So, in a compact with the governor, who says this about kids...
We're getting these absurd ideas that what we want is our first graders to have a Glock on their hip.
The tribes have been allowed to open drive-through pot stores, because the fact is, ain't nobody going to go out and smoke pot when they drive, right? They're not going to pull into the drive-through window, and they're not going to go consume the pot. I mean, what would be the numbers of people that would do that? 0%, right, governor?
I don't make stuff up. I don't have phony math.
So the experiment she's asking for is being done, but nothing changes. We can observe all around us the results of the experiment, and nothing changes. So it's not really an experiment, is it? Now we're experimenting with this. A father of a kid who photoshopped a picture of another kid's head on the barrel of a gun had his gun taken. Yep, the media loves this. Okay? It's called the Gun Seizure Team. King 5 News ran a celebratory headline about this, that we're going to go out and take the guns from parents whose kids make threats. So this is the so-called victim's father, the victim of the threat.
If he lives in the home where there are weapons, then I think he has access to weapons.
In what is believed to be the first case of its kind, the court issued a weapon surrender order requiring any household members to turn over their guns to police. The father of the accused surrendered his Taurus 380 pistol, like this one, and two rifles to Seattle police. The legal tactic was spearheaded by the new Seattle King County Regional Firearms Enforcement Unit.
Now, mind you, this is just one more trip cord. It's just one more thing surrounding the Second Amendment. My preference, if the kid's making serious threats, and these are believable threats, remove the kid from society. Because if he really wants to harm people, right, let's get him some help. Let's sit him down. Let's get him in counseling. Let's get him some psychiatric care. Let's see if he's developed some organic brain problems. For God's sakes, he's a young kid. Let's see if we can steer him down the right path. He deserves this compassion. His dad, on the other hand, didn't do anything. His dad, on the other hand, is not misusing his weapons. And we have a thing called due process, which I choose to respect. By the way, lots of people on Twitter pointed this out to me. This happened to a guy in New Jersey. He's an Iraq war veteran named Leonard Cottrell Jr. According to the Daily Wire, the police came to his house in New Jersey and said, hey, your kid made a threat. We're going to take your guns. He said, no, you're not. He said, I'm not giving them to you. He stood up and said, no. See, the focus here in this grand experiment that Ocasio-Cortez says the cities can be, we're going through the experiment. We know drug dealing is up. We know drug deaths are up. We know gang shootings are up. We know traffic is a mess. We know homelessness is a mess. We know the decriminalized heroin is a mess. We know. They're not experimenting. An experiment means you look at the conclusion. You look at the data. You look at how the experiment performed, and you change track. The very fact that Ocasio-Cortez thinks that we don't see that means that she refuses to see it, only seeing what she wants to see. We'll continue on the Todd Emmert Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. I was given some thought since now we're to believe that Donald Trump is owned lock, stock, and barrel by Putin. I was giving some thought to things Steve Bannon said years ago. I think this matters because I think it gets into why is the president inviting Putin here to the White House? Why is he doing this? Secondly, what are the policies that Putin would want the United States to pursue? What would he want us to do? Bar none, the most requested bands today on bumper music by request on Friday, Led Zeppelin. That's not always that way. Normally we have quite an array of artists.
Normally cows are what's requested the most.
We do have a lot of requests for cow songs. That is a fact, Tom. I want to get this thing on Putin and just a reminder of some things that Bannon said that I think still resonate with Trump. And I think that there is a method to what he's pursuing with Putin. And I think it comes from Bannon's thinking on the war of civilizations. And so that's kind of a heavy topic. We're going to get into that real quick. I want to get to some of the text messages. This is sort of important. We were talking about the guy in Green Lake who pepper sprayed a dad who happened to be an off-duty firefighter and his little girl who's two. You don't pepper spray two-year-olds. Now, the dad was over there saying, the firefighter's over there saying, hey, don't take pictures of people without their permission. Garrett, loyal listener to the show, has said, hey, that's bully behavior. Well, he wasn't arrested the guy wasn't arrested for taking pictures. He was arrested for assault. He was released, originally held on a $2,000 bail. Then he was released about 24 hours later. So he's out running around again. Then I get this note, because he's well known in Green Lake. I get this note on the text line. Hey, Todd, this is the guy with the camera the same guy who wears nothing but a jock strap and often carries an actual ninja sword? He does the same thing with his camera. Love your show, by the way. Thank you for loving the show. Thank you for the note. Here's what I know is the guy is well known in Green Lake for causing trouble and is like easily identifiable. Wouldn't surprise me if he's jock strap boy. Seattle needs to learn what any two-year-old learns very quickly. When you tolerate bad behavior, you'll get more of it. Mike in Kingston. That's fact. But Ocasio-Cortez says that we need to treat the cities as places to experiment with all this. So can I go pick up a pot my mom ordered online asking for a friend? That the drive-through pot stores. Right. Yeah, that pot. Absolutely. This is a good point. Never confront and threaten someone when you're holding your own two-year-old. That's a strong point. That is a very strong point because you're going to default to protecting your kid. The guy in New Jersey, we talked about this. This guy in New Jersey, the police came to his house, said, we're going to take your gun because your kid threatened people. From the text line here, the kid in New Jersey didn't even threaten anyone. He mentioned in a conversation something about school security. They tried to take the guy's guns at work as well. Look, we know these are tripwires. Thanks for the note. We know they're tripwires. Lastly, remember that the pot legalization law restricted use to in the home. Aside from the complete lack of enforcement on that point, the premise that pot users won't drive stoned is laughable because stoned people make bad decisions. He writes in all caps. We'll get back to the text line, 800-465-8770. The president bringing Putin here. Why? Steve Bannon, who I think continues to have an influence on the president. And I was really uncomfortable with Bannon, and still to some degree am. I don't buy that he's an anti-Semite at all. In fact, he's not. I mean, Ben Shapiro, who used to work for him, is kind of keyed into who is and is not an anti-Semite. And he doesn't think Bannon is. He doesn't particularly like Bannon, but he doesn't think he's an anti-Semite. I also don't buy the white nationalism stuff. Having read about Bannon's treatment of people in the workplace, it doesn't compute. Bannon's a sharp mind. He is a very, very smart individual. He is animated, and the reason he wanted to get into politics is Bannon observes a coming world war. Now, these are his words, as I understand his words. He observes a coming and real world war. Now, to the president's enduring credit, he has dismantled ISIS. President Obama made a decision to not do that. He made a decision to slap fight him or to thumb wrestle him. But he never made a serious attempt to dismantle them. President Trump has, and General Mattis has carried through on that. But what Bannon saw was the creation of a caliphate coming to fruition. What he saw was Muslims worldwide moving into Syria or moving into Iraq or wherever the caliphate was located and becoming a series of nations combining into one worldwide and going to war on a massive basis with the West. And Bannon's calculus, and this makes sense, is in such a war, we could not count on the UK. In such a war, we could not count on France or Germany. In Bannon's analysis, they were too far down the road in selling out. They were too far down the road in multiculturalism, refusing to recognize that with every good, decent Muslim person who had moved into Europe, Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and ISIS and others had moved extremists in. And I'll say on the show from time to time, evil hides within good. It's evil's greatest trick. It hides in good. So the good desires of people to help, evil takes advantage of that. That's happened on a broad basis in Europe. In Sweden, in France, in Germany, and you know this. And I know it makes me racist to point it out. That's what everybody says, right? Islam not being a race, but nonetheless. Bannon observed a war on the way. And it was Bannon's strategic calculus that Putin had pushed back extremist Islam from Russia. That he had pushed it out of the country. And that he had handled it and in some pretty brutal ways. Let's be honest. Putin's a thug. He's a cold thug. It was Bannon's suggestion that the United States in a war with radical Islam that had become nationified, that had achieved a Navy and had achieved an Air Force, which is something that Bannon had seen coming. Now, I don't know if he still sees it coming, given that the president and General Mattis have done such a good job against ISIS. That it would make sense for us to align with the other superpower, Russia, the other superpower who is against radical Islam, and in the case of Russia, has ousted it from their society. So that's why it might be that Trump is carrying on to create this relationship with Putin, in that Trump may be still operating along those sort of strategic lines or guidelines that Bannon laid out. He'd never get thought of that way. The press would never give him the credit to be thinking strategically. They could give him the credit of thinking that way and disagree with the strategy. They could say it's madness and it's stupid strategy and it's begging for world war. But they'll never give him any credit at all for even being impressed by or persuaded by a strategic observation from Steve Bannon. I hope that helps. Maybe put some context around why the president might be doing this. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. The degree to which someone can leave an elite university and have zero understanding of economics plays to the fact that economics in universities are no longer math-based. They are based in, can you say it with me? Feelings, nothing more than feelings. That's that lounge singer. What's his name? That Bill Murray used to be? Nick something or other? Go ahead, stick your head out the window. Give it a wheel. up the heavy metal horns. We do that on Friday. It is bumper music by request on the Todd Herman Show. I want to get to this this stunning display of what comes out of elite universities today, where, and particularly in economics, where did they teach the math anymore in economics? Because one time the math was sort of a big deal in the economics. Kind of had a math-type approach to the whole economics thing. So we'll get to that. To the text line in the last segment, 800-465-8770, I talked about Steve Bannon's position that the United States would be wise to cozy up with Russia because there's a world war coming, and it's going to be between the United States and a caliphate-powered nation-state, super nation-state, of radically Islamic states, and it's going to be a real war, and that Europe is already surrendered, Bannon's words, that we should be wise to try to cozy up to Russia. On the text line, hey, Todd, I do have a question about Russia meddling in our pre-election process. The experts in the FBI and in the intelligence community have said that Russia has meddled in our elections in the past. I was wondering, who did Russia support in 2000, 2004, 2008, and 2012, the Republicans or the Democrats? Did they support winning or the losing side? I don't, you know what, I join in believing they don't care. Putin doesn't care. He wants instability in our nation. And I think that's right, right? But they meddle in policies that will benefit them. Let me give you an example. We talked about this yesterday. It is a fact, and you can track this down. I shared the article yesterday, that the Russians promote anti-fracking around the world because their economy is based on oil. They did that here. That's not meddling in an election, but it's meddling in opinion and election processes. It's funding groups who create citizens' initiatives to ban fracking. It's meddling in our economy, our national state of mind. It's every bit as serious as meddling in an election. Remember, they didn't hack the voting boxes, so far as we know. They didn't do that. They hacked people's minds is the biggest contention, and I don't think it was that effective. So to answer your question, they are doing it now. They're going to continue to do it. But the media only wants to talk, of course, about the side that makes Trump look bad. Now, to this topic of the schools of economics, I am fascinated the degree to which someone like Alexandria Cortez, the woman, the pretend Brooklynite, we've talked a bit about that. She won this race in the New York 10th and took out this great big longtime Democrat incumbent. So I'm fascinated because I need to know, is she stupid or is she brainwashed? Because I don't like to assume, I don't, that people are dumb. This is a woman who went to Boston College. She got a degree in economics. She had some acclaim at the college. Listen to her discuss economics in our country.
Unemployment is low because everyone has two jobs.
Okay, let's stop there. That's not true. The number of people who have two jobs in our country has gone precipitously down. I went through the numbers in vivid detail yesterday. So that part's not true. Now, that could just be lying on the campaign trail, okay? Well, let's continue.
Unemployment is low because people are working 60, 70, 80 hours a week.
Okay, that doesn't make unemployment low. People working long hours is immaterial to unemployment. This is a Democrat belief that if you work a lot of hours, someone else works less. Okay, this is a woman with a degree in economics and international relations. And I'm a rodeo clown with a radio show.
And can barely feed their kids. And so I do think that right now, when we have this no holds barred, Wild West hyper capitalism.
Okay, let's stop. Where is that capitalism? Where is the no holds barred capitalism? We're told what light bulbs we have to buy. Restaurants, until Donald Trump, God bless him for doing it, saved them. We're going to have to publish menu guides like a pizza restaurant. The pizza restaurant would have to print menus that would be 10,000 pages long. Why? Because you'd have to put every possibility of the pizza that you could offer. So cheese, cheese plus pepperoni, cheese plus half pepperoni with half mushroom, cheese plus half pepperoni, half mushroom with olives on one side, cheese with sauce. You'd have to put every possibility down there. So from her perspective of economics, think of this again.
No holds barred, Wild West, hyper-capitalism.
That doesn't exist. It simply isn't here. Mick Mulvaney. Oh, I love Mick. Sorry, I just have to think of him for a second. Mick. He pointed out that if you raise chickens and they have an egg, that's the agriculture department. Crack the egg, put it in an omelet. Now it's egg plus FDA. Okay? There's no holds barred. Capitalism doesn't exist.
What that means is profit at any cost.
Really? So there are no companies that give back, say Microsoft, that will pay for you to go to college, etc.?
Capitalism has not always existed in the world.
This is the one that gets me. This is the one that shows absolute ignorance.
Capitalism has not always existed in the world, and it will not always exist in the world.
Now, she means, and she doesn't, the structure of people employing capital to empower management to grow the company so that you make money by giving it to others and having them grow your money. The Bible gives examples where Jesus, through the parables, speaks of good servants growing the money of the master by investing the money of the master. The fact of the matter is, from the day we began chronicling the human race, there's been an exchange of goods. I'm certain that cavemen traded things. Warm skin, need water. Phenomenal degree of either ignorance or purposeful ignorance.
Down on Main Street. Down on Main Street.
Hey, welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. And across the world on podcast. And if you don't yet have the podcast, A, that means you might be a communist, or you haven't yet texted the word podcast to 800-465-8770. Hey, in a personal note tonight, quite a conversation has ensued around a personal note I did a few days ago about the importance of allowing kids to experience pain and doubt and toil. As I go through this, this parenting journey that I'm on, I appreciate all the emails. Some of them, you know, really telling your own stories. I've shared a lot of those on the air. And by the way, we'll share more of those. We did hate mail today just because I thought it'd be nice for you to see the the other side of the equation. People who, for some reason, listen to the show but hate me. I'll never get that, but thank you for adding to the to my wealth. So this conversation that's ensued about pain brought back to mind one of the things that really turned me into a solid believer in Christianity. I didn't say a great Christian. I said a solid believer in Christianity. I'm a broken cat, and I need redemption multiple times a day. I will always need it. There's a book by C.S. Lewis, and it's called The Problem of Pain. And it explores what is a God doing allowing us to go through pain? And if God is real, why does he allow animals to suffer? That they can't be improved by pain? They can't learn from pain? Why does he allow evil to exist? And there's multiple angles to this book, but the one that got me and the one that took me in and helped solidify my Christianity compares to my own life. And that is that the lessons I hold most dear are the lessons gained through pain. I hold them most dear because they have done the most for me. The pain of watching my parents go through a divorce and the pain of being affected by divorce has made me very, very committed to staying in my marriage. Very committed. And look, marriages have ups and downs. Yours does and mine does. But it's made me committed to that because I watched the destruction that it wrought upon me. Now, I didn't realize how tough it was on me as a kid. But as I look back on this, I understand the confusion. I understand not wanting to accept what had gone on, but having to. It was a reality. But I also understood that I became a different person. I did. After my father left the house, I went from being a dutiful student, someone who played by the rules, to someone who was now questioning authority and vibrantly questioning authority, and not just vibrantly, but actively and negatively questioning authority and acting out against it. Now, of course, part of that is my conservatism. Part of that is that I can't stand unfettered power. But part of it was also that I was angry. I was angry at the authority in my life. You had taken something from me, something I had been led to believe would always exist. That is mom and dad in this house. So that problem with pain, why would God allow that to go on? Had I not seen that, would I have the same respect for marriage as something greater than the two people that I do now? Right? So I do have that. Luckily, my wife has the same vision. She had the same thing go on in her life, the pain of divorce. We've both been through that, and therein another lesson. Life is puzzle pieces, and for some reason, my wife and I fit together. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, and I could go into that and have done that on Mother's Day, and I do that on my wife's birthday, talk about these things. But those shared moments of pain and those shared moments of experience brought us together in ways that other people wouldn't fit. They wouldn't fit into the great puzzle piece of life. God is aware of this. God is aware that if there is no pain, there's no pleasure. And this is part of the equilibrium, one of the reasons that this book brought me into being a firm Christian. I didn't say a perfect one. God forbid, not even close. But a firm Christian. Because without the pain, we have no pleasure. Pleasure is meaningless. The lessons learned through pain. As I'm sitting here learning about eating disorders and learning about how they affect young people, I'm learning a new way of observing the world. I'm learning that there are secrets that young people have in the eating disorder community. Things like popsicles. Did you know that? Yeah, these kids, they figure out ways to get the most taste per calorie. It's almost mathematical. What? Since I'm not going to eat dense foods, calorie-dense foods, I'm not going to eat oils, I'm not going to eat proteins, I'm going to eat things that are less dense, what has the biggest bang for the buck? Well, a lot of these kids choose popsicles because it's a zap, it's sensual, it's cold, it's citrusy. So I learned that through pain. And in learning that, I learned ways to see how others are dealing with food. God gives us these moments of pain to learn. My dad did something really terrible. A lot of people think it was terrible. My younger brother, Charlie, he always liked to go near the hot stove. And my dad had to caution him multiple times. It's going to burn you. Don't go near the stove. Do not touch the stove. Finally, my dad got sick of telling him not to touch the stove. He let him touch the stove. And my brother screamed. My dad was sitting there right there with a great big bowl of water with ice in it, shoved his hand into it to prevent the really bad burn from coming, made him sit there and cool his hand down. My dad used to be a firefighter, by the way. So immediately went into that treatment. Nothing life-lasting in terms of a scar, but a life-lasting lesson. I told you it's hot. I told you it's going to burn you, and it did. These moments, these lessons that we learn through pain are lessons that last for a lifetime. Lessons learned through pleasure. What was the lesson you learned through pleasure? How to be pleasurable? How to gain pleasure? What feels good? How to be in flow? Those are great. What's the most painful lesson you've ever had that taught you more about life than any of the pleasurable notions? Well, death, death of a loved one. I learned more about my dad in his deathbed than I did in 44 years of living. More about the man. I learned more about his world. I met more of his friends. I heard more of his stories he'd never told me in that period of time. I also learned this. I will not go that way. I will not let my body go that way. I will not allow myself to become that unhealthy. I will not do it. My dad told me, endeavor to stay healthy, Todd. And I have. Those moments of pain, Those are the ones that matter. So the problem with pain, it's not God's design to hurt us. It's God's design to build us, up into beings who understand the range of possibilities and how they relate to our personal decisions. Animals go through pain. They don't learn from that. It's nonsense. Animals learn from pain like we do, but they learn at a different level. They evolve differently. They are different beings. Do they have souls? I don't know. I do know that my dogs don't go near certain things anymore. And I know that over time, species evolve. Back to the human species. We have borders. We have rules. We observe laws. We have order. Because we learn from the pain of a disordered world, of a world run by people's moods, by a dictator's mood in the morning versus the evening. We learned from pain. This is the Todd Herman Show. We are every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I will see you Monday at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, and be kind.